Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Welcome to episode 88. Woohoo! Yeehaw!
Oh ho!
You can catch the links for this episode at theaterfolk.com/episode88. Today, I'm talking to playwright Stephen Stack, whose new play, Ashland Falls, has found a lovely home in our catalog. But he's also a longtime director, so we're going to get him to share his tips and his tricks for directing youth and student actors. How do you do it? He's also going to share some bonus tips for how to write when you can't wait to be inspired. Now, that is a trick. Let's find out how he does it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Theater Folk Podcast. I am very happy and thrilled today. I'm looking out my window. There's snow on the ground, but I can see green. I can see green, and the sun is warm, so that's good. And I'm very happy to welcome Stephen Stack to the podcast. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Lindsay.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Been sitting at my computer since 4 this morning.
Why?
Well, because at the studio I work for, we have an end of the year show, and I need to write 7 scenes, and I've only had 6 days to do it because of planning issues and stuff. So I'm in the final stretch now.
So Stephen is one of our playwrights, but he also directs youth, and we're going to talk all about that, some tips and tricks about working with youth. But you've just said a very interesting thing, which I think also is would be good for others. So you need to write. You can't wait for inspiration. You have a deadline. You have to get this stuff done. How do you do it? How do you propel yourself to write those 7 scenes?
Well, basically, it's just make myself. I sit in front of the computer and then I start writing regardless. Because one of my writer friends, Alex Bledsoe, once when I was talking about writer's block, he basically just said, you know, that's a myth, right? If you want to write or need to write, then you write. And at that point, it was pretty much done. So I need to write. So I do. And I basically, you know, you get a semblance of an idea and then you just run with it and get that first draft out of the way and don't go back. And when you write a terrible line, don't go, oh, that's awful. I need to fix it. Just keep going until you finish it and see what happens.
I'm a firm believer in ugly writing and ugly first drafts. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way to write. So do you create on computer?
Yes.
Yeah. Why does that work for you?
Because then I have usually I listen with my headphones music too, which there's no one's here. I don't know why I put on my headphones, but I do. And it's just easier for me because I like the bright screens. I like my comfortable chair. But I mean, I also use, sometimes when I have more time, I use my memo pad too. I don't like writing just on notebook paper, mm-hmm. but I'm a huge fan of the flip notebook. I'm a huge, I have tons of them and I get more and more for birthdays and Christmas, even though I have a lot already.
I used to, in my temping days, I temped a lot at lawyers' offices and government offices. And I have a very fond affection for yellow legal pads.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, so that it's actually even, it's a little bit longer and it's just, you know.
Well, I like the white better just because I'm mesmerized by the yellow. And then when I write with different colors, I get kind of carried away and distracted because I get distracted very easy with those things. And I just that yellow and red just blends really nicely. And then I'm not writing anymore. So
then you're just in your own little mesma world, right?
Yeah. And it happens a lot. So I have to go white there. So it's less distracting.
That's interesting that you listen to music when you write. Do you find that's a good focuser for you?
Absolutely. Because I can't watch TV at all. But when I have the music in, it just kind of fades into the background. And because I don't like working in silence, because then I end up just talking out loud. And then that's just kind of weird for me because I'm not talking about what I'm writing. So then listening to music just makes it just like a little perfect world.
I'm a silent writer. Or, you know, sometimes I listen to, it sounds very icky spooky, but I listen to mantras. Those go into the background for me. They're on YouTube everywhere. But music, I will listen to. And but here's a site which is really interesting. I think it's called Focus at Will. And it is very specifically, the music apparently is very specifically designed for focused writing, whether it's on or focused work on computer or whatever. And it is, I'm going to put it in the show notes. I'll make sure I have the right website. Craig uses it. And you put a type of focus that you want, you know, like you want like, and it'll, the music will play, you know, excited or soothing or driving. And he loves it. So.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And it's always interesting. I always like to have these kinds of discussions because, you know, there's that big myth about how writing happens the same way for everybody. And if you don't write a certain way or you don't like silence, then you're not a good writer. And it's like, nope, that's not the way it works.
Yeah, because I mean, in the end, that's what you have to do. You've got to find what works for you. And I mean, and at different times, different things will work for you. Because there's times when I'm getting near the end where I'll go upstairs and I will just have nothing. And then as I'm editing and as I'm writing, I'll be playing all the characters out loud, which is highly entertaining for my kids. And that's one thing I really enjoy doing. And sometimes I do that early on in the project. Like for one of the scenes I just wrote today, I turned off the music and I just played all the characters as I wrote. And then it established that nice flow, which I have to because they audition Wednesday and they have to have the final copy before spring break. So
yeah, got to get it done. And, you know, like to speak out loud, this is what we do. Plays are meant to be, they're meant to be said aloud. You can't just leave it on the page and never have put it out there.
And it's really fun to do, too. Like it's highly enjoyable. Unless it's bad and then you go, oh man.
Unless you're in public and people like, sometimes I catch myself because I'm really good at inner talking out loud.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I will actually gesture and I'll start to do that and see rhythms in my head. And if I'm in public, because sometimes I like to change up my location,
mm-hmm.
just to go choose a different location and that jogs things a bit. And I have caught I have been stared at and I'm like, oh shoot, no, I'm not crazy. I'm just writing.
Yeah, I tend to embarrass my older daughter sometimes when I'm doing that. And I was like, my bad, I'm sorry. It's just really funny. I'll write that down.
So this is a nice segue into what we're going to talk today about, you know, having plays and not leaving them on the page, getting them not only said out loud, but getting them produced. You direct with your studio. So you direct the first production of all your plays, correct?
Right. So, and that does help out a lot.
I imagine just because you can, well, you have like a testing ground to see what it's like to when your plays are brought to life.
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking too, because basically I have my first draft and then I make the edits and then it has to be ready to perform almost instantly because the actors need more time. And then we have a show coming up and an audience that expects this show to work. And it's a little stressful at time, but it's also really cool to see if we can all pull it together in basically one take in some ways.
Do you do a lot of rewrites in rehearsal?
I started that this year because when I did, for the first couple of years, I just did random scenes and that was cool. Well, this year I decided that I wanted a play to tie it all together with the scenes. And so that made it, there was a lot of times where they would be rehearsing and this happened all the way like a week before the show. And I go, that doesn't work for me anymore. Let's go with this. But the thing is, they were just so like amazingly excited about doing it. Like they enjoyed the changes, even though it did cause them stress. But they like the aspect of, okay, the show's not finalized until almost opening night. So
I find that particularly with high school students, they don't have a preconceived notion about what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so adaptable and they work on the fly really well.
Absolutely.
I've been to shows and have learned that, well, the lead in the show, you know, had to be replaced like 2 days beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the last play that I just premiered in February, that would happen. The lead wasn't memorizing her lines. A week before the show, a new girl came in. She was in grade 5. She learned an entire full length play in 4 days. And she hadn't, you know, she had no concept and she was fantastic. And it's like, they'll work with what you've got.
Oh yeah. And cause I also work with like 7 to 9 year olds and they had the same thing. Like I was changing their lines and one of them happened to be my daughter who's in the class too. And they got so excited cause they felt like they were the teen class, like the older kids. And it just, their professionalism at that age was fantastic. So
I love that. That's awesome.
It was really great to see.
So let's talk about what it specifically takes to direct young people and youth, because it's quite different than directing adults, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. And I enjoy it a lot more. Like, nothing against directing adults. I mean, it's fine. But directing kids, like, they just seem to be more into the ones I've worked with, because some adult actors have been fantastic. But the students just seem to go, okay, let's do this. And their ego hasn't taken over as much.
Right.
And they accept direction really well.
What do you do? Do you ever have to deal with shy students? Like, how do you bring a shy youngster out of their shell?
Well, basically what I do is try to put them in a position where they're going to succeed. And with rehearsals, it starts like in rehearsals at the beginning, where we do things where they get more and more outside of themselves. And a lot of what we do too is like focus on letting them understand that it's not about one person, it's about everybody, and everybody has to do their part. And then we also talk too, one of my beliefs is that self-consciousness comes from putting the focus on yourself. And when you take the focus off yourself and you put it on the character or on the work, what happens is you're not self-conscious on stage, or you're not shy on stage anymore, because you're focusing on what that character wants and you're working for that. So what I do is push them in class and in rehearsal just to keep taking the focus off themselves, not to make it about them, to make it about what the character wants or needs. And it's amazing how that, when they're actually doing that, it changes. Like, we've had a lot of breakthroughs just this year with certain students who have been the quietest, shyest students. We had one with this one girl in a very serious scene, like for weeks, nothing really. But I was like, I know she's got it. So we stressed it and kept doing it. And then one time in rehearsal, she just busted it out. And I stopped rehearsal. I was like, that is it. You've had your moment where you just dominated that character. It was beautiful. And she did it in the show too.
I think that's amazing. I wonder if that's the same reason why a lot of times young students, when they put mask on, that they can find themselves, because they're putting, it's not them, it's somebody else.
Well, yeah. And I think that is. And one thing we've stressed too, like, this always sounds like rough at the beginning, but when I talk to them in class, I'm like, this class is all about you. But when we start rehearsal, it's all about the character. It's not about you anymore. It's about the play. And then it's about each other creating that world. And there's some kind of relief that actually comes from knowing it's not about them, that it is about the character and about creating this magic on stage. It's kind of freeing.
Are there any specific exercises that you do to, or is it just in the process of rehearsal?
Well, we do a lot of that in the process of rehearsal, and we do a lot, like, I'm a huge fan of character bios and talking about what the character wants and getting those action verbs in there and stuff. So that allows them to start thinking that way. So before scenes start, it's like, why are you coming on stage? Why do you say this? Why do you say that? And if the focus is on themselves, they can't answer the question.
Yes. Awesome.
And when the focus, and the more we do it, because it's just, you know, it's like anything in life, the repetition of it, the constant pushing and the constant to go deeper and deeper, because the whole thing, one thing they're used to, they actually laugh at me sometimes when I go, hey, that was a really great show, and we talk specifics, and then they go, well, I know what you're going to say now. Now go out and do better. It's like, you did this today. What are you going to do tomorrow? Like, what are you going to discover about your character? And the more you push that, you know, since it's a process, and if you push it and you have kids that are willing to work and willing to get better, it's just amazing what they're capable of.
Where do you lie in the process product about which is more important when you're working with students?
Oh, it's actually really interesting. When I first started directing, I thought it all came down to the product, and that was all about the product. And then as time went on, I realized I became more obsessed with the process. And then I read a book about John Wooden, and he was talking about, they were asking him about his undefeated seasons in basketball. And he said, I don't necessarily care whether we win or lose. I care that we got into a position at the beginning of the game that we could win, that we were going to do our best, that we practiced as well as we could have to do everything in our power to have a chance at winning. And in the end, that's what I really value. Like, that in our rehearsal, like, I love rehearsal so much now, because you focus on that process, developing these characters. Because in the end, there's so many variables that go into that final show, like the, you know, the actual performance, that sometimes you just can't control, like props and things. You got interesting audiences and stuff, but you can't control that. But that, you know, when you go through the whole rehearsal process and get that, where that last dress rehearsal and you go, this is your show. It's one of my favorite moments when I just give the show to them. And I just say, this is your show. Be there for each other. come through for each other. And then when you take your curtain call, know that you deserve it.
I love that. That's that really that whole notion. It's very true. You can't control what happens in a performance all the time, but you can certainly control your process.
Yeah. And that's what I have. And I realize I wish I would have known that earlier when I first started, but now I do. So I fixed it from there. You know, it's like getting better and learning new things. So,
you know, it's funny. We just did a Google Hangout about what do I wish I knew when I was starting out as a drama teacher. And I think that is a really good one about look at process and product. That's what the difference is. You can control process and then let the product happen and where the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, exactly. And it takes a lot. It puts some added pressure on them, but at the same time, it also knows, lets them know that they've done the work, mm-hmm. that they deserve success. And knowing that you deserve it, like you deserve the success because of what you've done, is so powerful.
So a couple of times you've been really brought up about the notion of the community of your players, of your students, and that how they sort of have to work together, and that it's not about you as an individual, it's about a we. So talk about how community, do you think community is important for student actors?
Well, I think it's vital. One of the things we do in all my classes that we've do in all the rehearsals is a check-in, where the students are allowed to, at the very beginning, we do a checkout afterwards, but where they're allowed to share whatever they want, like what, you know, how their day's gone, or, you know, something funny that happened to them, or something they're struggling with, and they share it with the whole group. They don't have to share. And we talk, you know, clearly about how it stays in there. And what happens is, and what is amazing to watch, is that these students really open up and they share things about themselves and they share what they're going through. And it helps just create that community of one, basically, that we're not alone. And then we also do an activity called Who Am I? Where the students walk around and then they think about who they really are, not just what the people, you know, what teachers or what I think of them or what their parents think of them, but who they really are. And then when they know, they share it with everyone. And it is amazing how you do like the check-in and the Who Am I activities, that after those are done, just the first couple of like the first time or the check-ins constantly, you really see people wanting to come through for one another. And it changes the whole like spectrum of the rehearsal process. And it's actually probably the most important thing I do with like the who are you and the daily check-in. I mean, some check-ins are completely ridiculous. And then, but those are important too, just as the meaningful, like the really serious ones too.
Well, you need that balance.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it's what you're doing too is creating an atmosphere of trust.
You have to, because if you really want to transport your audience to the world of this show, that means that every single actor has to be in on that too, that they have to trust each other to be able to take that journey with each other, because it can't happen if a couple of people don't feel like they're involved or they don't trust the other actors, they're not working as hard. Because if we can create that magic on stage, then we can create that magic for the audience too.
Mm-hmm. Ah, it's awesome.
So we really push for that, because it's so much more fun to watch and it's so much more fun to act when you actually feel that, like, wow, we created that magic tonight.
For sure. Okay, so what would you say is your biggest challenge with directing youth?
Well, I think the thing is that you want to, I actually talked to a parent a couple days ago, and he was seeing like, because I really focus on the process, sometimes when I'm casting, I put actors in a position that they're not necessarily ready for, but I know it's going to help them grow.
Mm-hmm.
If I get them there. So I'm like, okay, if the show doesn't work, that's okay, because it's a learning thing. And then you talk to parents, and then you have them, they talk about other like actors' breakthrough, and they go, and then you hear them go, I really want this for my kid too. Like, I feel like they're on the edge of something. And then, because when I had this conversation with this dad, I thought about my own kids, and I was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then you want to get them all to that next level. So it becomes so much more than about the play, because it's their life. It's like they've chose to spend this part of their teenage years or their childhood with you. And you really want to come through for them to make sure you find all the talent they have and just get them ready for the next step, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the challenge, because sometimes, you know, you look back and you go, I could have done more with this student.
Yeah, it's hard too when you put them in the position and they don't always step up, you know?
Right. And it's like I had this conversation with the play we did just recently, where I told the lead, I was like, you have the potential to pull off this role. You also have the potential not to pull off this role, and you're the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So here's your part. I'm going to work you and you're going to do the work, but we'll see what happens. And you see their eyes grow big and they're like, okay. The good news is, like, she totally nailed it too. It was she has huge breakthroughs. But yeah, I've had it happen before where I put someone in that position and it didn't go that well.
Yeah. And do you ever get the other thing where parents aren't so interested in the breakthrough? They're like, well, why Jimmy should be the lead? Why isn't Jimmy the lead?
Oh, absolutely. But the way I deal with things, and I tell them, like when we're casting, I say, look, I promise you this. I will cast this play, not of what's necessarily best for you, but except for that, you know, those exceptions where you're really pushing, but what is best for the characters. That's what it's about for me. And then, like, because I would never cast someone that had no chance to pull off a role. And I tell parents that too, when they come up to me, I've had parents come out and was like, well, it's not about your daughter because this person was better for the role. And, you know, when they get that, some, you know, get angry. And I was like, but I put your daughter where she's best. It may not be the biggest role, but this is where she's best at right now. Because teaching middle school, I've dealt with some really interesting parents. So I've had a lot of like moments where you have to go, you know what? It's just better to deal with directly with them and just be very matter of fact.
They're coming from that emotional place. And there's, if you match them, that's not good. That's just not going to end well.
Oh yeah. Cause I found out when teaching middle school too, like I never yell as a teacher at all because it just never worked for me. Cause when I was growing up, my dad, when I was about to blow off a course in college, like any call I talked to him and I thought he was going to yell at me and then would have made me not care. But instead he just said, just so you know, you can do whatever you want, but I'm extremely disappointed in you. And I was like, oh. And then I stayed up the rest of the night to do that paper and did not blow off that class only because of that. Like I could tell he cared. And then I've used that in my teaching. And parents see that too, you know, that, you know, you care about their kids, but there's just some things you have to do.
I like putting it on the character because there's no argument.
Yeah.
There's just no argument. It's like, this is the, what is best for the characters.
And having, you know, written most of them too, they understand that I'm going, like, I like these characters, so I want to see them represented well on stage, you know?
That's right. Absolutely. So, you segue me so well. So let's get into, speaking of talking about your plays, so you've got a new one with us and it's called Ashland Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Do you generally do full lengths when you write? You seem more like in the hour, or is it? Yeah, because she wrote, she died, and wrote some more as a one act. The Bottom of the Lake is a longer one act. And then we've got this really full, and I mean that as in wonderful as opposed to full length, piece called Ashland Falls, which takes place at a high school. And there's a lot of mystery behind it. We have students who are putting on a play, but it was mysteriously delivered, and their original director disappeared. And then there's another director kind of shows up with an English accent. And then mystery gets the deeper and deeper and deeper. So do you usually do full lengths?
Not normally. And this one actually came out from the fact that last year, it was my first time I was teaching a 3-week high school summer camp at UW-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I want to do something different than I do for my middle school. And so I was like, I'm going to write a 2-act. I haven't written one before, but let's just do it anyway. So I was like, what do I want it to be? And instantly I thought of Noise Is Off,
mm-hmm.
because that was my favorite show to ever do. And I have a really funny story about that at some point, about the rehearsal process. It's really funny. So then I was like, I want to do the first act similar to Noise Is Off, where it's a rehearsal process that goes awful. And then I'm obsessed with English accents and ghost stories. So I was like, well, I want the second act to be an English ghost story then.
Well, and it's what you're good at. And I love that it is very much inspired by Noise Is Off, but it's not a comedy except that it's got so much humor to it, but it's that second act is just very genuinely intense.
It is. And when the actors were working with it, because they were having a lot of fun with the first act and then the second act. And that's where the challenge comes in as a high school, as an actor, because the vibe is totally different.
Mm-hmm. You have to switch gears very, very abruptly between act one and act two.
And it was so much fun for me to write too, because in the first act, you have hints of that. Like, they're similar in a lot of different ways. And then, but then the second act, you get to deal with like some very serious life issues, like non-directly and stuff, which made me happy because I love when I see a play or when I watch something or read something that you're getting all the different kind of emotions that we deal with on a daily basis. It was so much fun to write too.
So when you came to direct it, what were your challenges?
Well, basically one of the challenges was to do a two-act play in 3 weeks where you only could rehearse in the afternoon for 3 hours because in the morning you were doing class.
Right.
That was the biggest part. And also like when the summer came, you don't know necessarily who's going to be there and you have to cast on whoever signs up for the class.
Right. Because usually you in your studio, you have been working with a lot of your students for years.
Absolutely.
And this, you can write specifically to students. So this is a much different situation where it's a normal situation.
Exactly. Right. And like, so you knew that everybody in the class was going to get a part. So, I mean, I arranged, you know, cause I make sure the numbers where I need a certain number of guys and, you know, girls, I needed that. But other than that, it was just going, okay. So then, and we had basically that one day for auditions, and then you have to cast people where, you know, you're making judgment calls on where could they go.
Mm-hmm. I find it really rewarding when I write something and then I go see it and I'm like, well, I never saw it that way. And how awesome is it that it can be interpreted that way and it can be that the text supports it, meaning you've done a good job. How was that when you put your work in hands of people that you weren't quite sure and then it came to life?
Well, I love it when the actors make your work better than it is,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the things that you go, oh, wow, you just made that way better. You took that writing to a whole new level. And that's really fun to see, like, especially when you have that like very first draft of something. And it's fun when they interpret it a way that you, like when I'm reading all the characters out loud and, you know, back in the, you know, in the early stages, and then they take it in a brand new direction and you're like, that is really cool. So there was a lot of compliments there. Like I got to see those actors do that. And then some of the actors, I just got blown away like by the time of the performance. Cause you know, in a short amount of time, it doesn't really come together until probably opening night, you know, so.
As it should be. That's all right.
Exactly. It's where you go, how's it going to work out? So yeah, that was really cool. And it was a lot of fun to do and to see it. Cause the actors really enjoy the fact that they got to have more fun, like just goofy kind of fun, like be high schoolers in the first act.
And then just not be English aristocrats.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was so cool because when they first found out they had to have English accents, they're like, I can't do one. I was like, all you have to do is get one close enough to play a high school actor who's not actually British doing this accent.
Did you do any exercises to help students sort of gain confidence with those accents?
We would practice like various, like we, cause we'd go over various words on how they basically should sound. We listened to a few dialect tape, but not a lot cause we just didn't have the time. So it was really interesting. And we would do, those were parts of our warm up where they would a line that they were having trouble saying,
mm-hmm.
and then they would just go for it. Cause what I pushed though is basically that the character stuff. Cause in that second act, they have to really, well, in the first act too, but in a different way, in the second act, they have to develop that character. Like, why is that character the way they are? Why did they get to this point that all of this stuff is happening? And I was like, and then what's going to happen is the more you know about the character, the accent's just going to come from that because you've got it already in you because of, you know, the little practice we've done. But also you're playing that character and everything else, it's just going to blend together if you push it enough. And then they did. So,
well, it's a multi-layered thing because if we connect to who those characters are when they're the actors, and then we want to see, and we see the little snippets of who they are in the play within the play, and then we see them, and then of course, because that's a full length, things happen at the end of act one, and then we get to act two where they're playing the characters in the play, we have to have connected to them.
Absolutely.
So that we are on for the ride.
And the only way that can happen is like you brought up, is like for the actors to connect, and that connection actually, it happens in rehearsal. Because, you know, the connection that the actor forms with the character can't happen on opening night. The work had to be done beforehand.
And all that stuff we've been talking about, character profiles, just community building.
Oh, yeah. And because it's so many things factor into creating that, you know, the magic on stage. So many things. So, And it's just a fun, like all of the process. If you look at all the variables that just go into creating a show, it's really cool.
I like it. It's kind of the reason I'm in this field. I think so. Just before we go, so what advice would you give to a director who's looking at your play, Ashland Falls?
I think the main thing is to just go into it and look at it first, the first act and second act, completely differently, but then just go into creating, like spending a lot of time on character development, and that they have two distinct characters that they've got to create, but allow the character actors to explore and really work on developing that community where they feel, all the actors feel safe with one another and that they're all on the same page, and just to make it a journey. Like, go, we're about to embark on a journey that's really, really awesome. It's going to be like serious at times. It's going to be funny at times. It's going to be scary at times. It'll never be boring.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster.
As we create this world and just go with that. And because they really, I mean, once you give it, you set it up like that, the actors just jump at it and you're like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do it. It's awesome.
Hey, can I tell you my noises off rehearsal story?
Of course.
Because it's pretty awesome and painful. So, it's ridiculous too. So I did it originally like a year after college, and we had such a great cast that we're like 10 years later, let's all get back together and do it again. So we did, because I figured like it would just be talk. But we did, we got all together. And then one week we had a rehearsal, and then we're gonna get back and perform it a month later. So I was Gary, which meant I had to fall down the stairs. And when I got there and I saw the set, it was all like, the stairs were really small and really steep and wooden and sharp because it wasn't finished. And if I fell down the flights of stairs right, when I got close to the bottom, there were two drops. To the left, there was a 6-foot drop. To the right, there were 3 steps, and I'd be happy, you know, happily laying there at the end.
I can see where this is going.
Exactly, right? So during the last rehearsal, I have done perfectly well. I mean, I was covered in bruises because of the way the steps were built. But the last time, I start going all the way down the stairs, and I'm like, whoops, I've now lost control of my fall. Had no control of it all. So I fall off the other side, fall 6 feet, and land on my back. So the other actors, I think I'm dead. And I'm just like, keep going. I'm good. So we kept going, and I'm serious pain. And then after the rehearsal's over, the director, one of my friends, too, he looks at me and goes, that was a good fall. I'm like, thanks. He goes, can we keep that fall for the show? I'm like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, it looked really good. And I was like, okay. So for the when we did the show, and then we had one more rehearsal, I had to fall off the 6-foot drop each time. And it worked though, because it did look really, really cool. So, but man, it was painful.
It's only good if it hurts. As my friend says, my friend who's an aerialist, it's like all the good tricks hurt.
That's right.
Awesome. Okay. So thank you so much, Stephen. This is a really great conversation. I think it's it's really good to just get out there about directing and what it's like to build a community and how important characters are. Actually, I think if those are the only two things as a director of high school or middle schoolers, community, character. That's it.
Yep.
You know what?
And that's where the most fun too. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so Ashland Falls. So that's Ashland Falls by Stephen Stack. We will have the link in the show notes so that you can go and read the wonderful sample pages, because it is a roller coaster. I think that's the only way to describe it, with an accent. So, you know. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Don't forget, you can find the links for this episode at theaterfolk.com/episode88. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. So what have we been doing? What is new? Well, there was an in-depth blog post last week about preparing middle school students to perform monologues. We did a Google Hangout, drama teacher hangout, all about finding, choosing, and performing monologues. And there was a pretty, now I'm tuning my own horn. I was just about to say pretty awesome. Okay, well, I like it, and I think it's okay. It's a Shark Tank meets monologue exercise. You can find all the links to all of these in the show notes, theaterfolk.com/episode88. And you may have guessed, April is all about the monologue. Monologue, monologue, monologue. And we are going to have something pretty special coming your way later in the month. Stay tuned. Finally, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk. You can find us on the Stitcher app. And you can subscribe to TFB on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.